Amen. Thanks, Terry. You can grab a seat. So I've been looking forward to today for a while because today we start through a series that's going to take us through pretty much the rest of the summer as we are going to walk through the Old Testament book of Joshua starting today. We're going to go through key passages. We're going to see amazing things in this story. And I want to invite you just to be struck with the strange way that the book of Joshua begins in what we just heard read. The book of Joshua, the sixth book of the Bible, begins with a death announcement. If you look in verses 1 to 2 of the passage, it says, "After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, 'Moses, my servant, is dead.'" Now, Joshua probably knew this. This was not news. The book of Deuteronomy ends with the death of Moses and with the people of Israel grieving over his death. So this was less about God conveying information to Joshua and more about God marking that there was a new era that the Israelites were about to enter into. Moses is now dead, and Moses was a massive figure in Israel. Just think for a second about Moses. Even if you're not super familiar with the Bible, you probably know something about Moses. Moses was the one that God called to go to the Pharaoh in Egypt where the Israelites were slaves and to go face to face with the Pharaoh and say, "Let my people go." Moses was the one who stood over the Red Sea with his staff out until God carved a path through the sea for the Israelites to walk through on dry ground. And Moses is the man that came down from Mount Sinai with two tablets of stone with the laws of God written on them and with his face glowing because of the glory of God that he had encountered on the mountain. Moses, that massive figure in the history of Israel, the person that throughout the Old Testament and in a lot of the New Testament is referred to in a way that he's inescapably tied to Israel's identity, that Moses is now dead. And if you take the very next part of the verse, he says, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you." This book is called Joshua, because Joshua is taking over for Moses. "Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give them to the Israelites." Joshua, Moses is dead. "Now then, you." Just think of how daunting it would have been to take over for somebody like Moses. There's something, you know, in organizations and companies, there's frequently, some of you will have heard of this, there's a sequence that's talked about happening when a founder retires from a company, the person who started the company. In fact, it even applies to churches a lot of times also. And it's a three-part sequence, and it goes like this: founder, scapegoat, hero. And here's why that sequence has been identifiable for a lot of people in companies and, again, even in churches. You got the founder. And the founder is not a perfect person, but a founder is this daunting, almost mythical figure because they're the one who started the business. They're the one who built the company. They're the founder of the company. And then after the founder retires, the next person who comes in and steps into their shoes is the scapegoat. Because there's no way they can possibly live up to the founder. No matter what they do, they just end up always being compared, and often they end up being run out of town pretty quickly. Founder, scapegoat, and then the hero comes in. And the hero is not even as great as the founder, but the hero is just considered to be better than the scapegoat. And so they end up getting things back on track. And so here's what people have learned about this as far as succession goes. You don't want to follow the founder. You want to follow the guy who followed the founder. Joshua is following the founder. Now, ultimately, all of us would say, well, no, God is the founder of the nation of Israel. It's not Moses, it's God. Moses would say that same thing. He'd say, "I'm not the founder of this nation, God is." And that's true. But from an outward perspective and from a human perspective, Moses played that role, and now Joshua is called to step into his sandals and to lead Israel into their next part of the journey. That this would have been both terrifying and exciting. I mean, there's something exciting about being in that position where you get to lead, but there's also something terrifying because as they're getting ready to go into the promised land, there's enemies and there's obstacles and there's danger and there's uncertainty. It's terrifying and it's exciting. Let me just ask you a quick question. Have you ever been on the verge, getting ready to do something that was both exciting and terrifying? Like we probably all have in some way. Maybe it was a new phase of life. Maybe it was a new school or a new job or just a new phase of life where you've just had kids or maybe you're just empty nested and you're entering into it. And on the one hand, you're like, this is kind of exciting. There's something new. Who knows what could happen? But it's also terrifying because of all the uncertainty. Like if this goes well, this will be great. If this goes badly, it'll be terrible. Joshua is taken over from Moses. And man, if this goes well, he gets to be at the helm as they enter into the land that God promised their people. But if this goes badly, he's going to be not only the scapegoat, but he's going to oversee Israel during a dark time in their period. Joshua is getting ready to enter into a trust walk. In fact, this is the title of our series through Joshua is a trust walk. And the people have different terms for this, but a trust walk is where you're blindfolded and you need to get through an obstacle course. And the only way you're going to get through an obstacle course is that there's somebody who can see who leads you and gives you instructions along the way. Anybody here ever been on some form of a trust walk? Yeah, they do these things. It's like team building activities. A trust walk is when you can't see where you're going and you're trusting the person who's leading you. Joshua is about to enter into a trust walk as he doesn't know all that's before him, but he's got to trust that God will lead him well. And the reason why we're calling this story trust walk is because that's what it's like to follow Jesus. And on the one hand, Jesus is infinitely trustworthy. And on the other hand, he doesn't spell out for us what each step of the process is going to look like. But he leads us, and sometimes just with the very next step, and we walk forward in trust. Joshua is about to enter into a trust walk, which is what the book of Joshua is about. And in this first chapter, we get to see the preparation for it. And so here's one of the reasons why I'm excited about today. Some of you may be on the verge of God calling you to a new, exciting, scary step of faith. Maybe there's something he's been putting on your heart. Maybe even as Tim was talking about the go teams, maybe there's something related to that. Maybe some of you are getting ready for your first go team, either to Honduras or later on in the year to Thailand, and you're excited, but you're scared about what it's going to be like. And maybe for some of you, there's some new step of faith that has to do with serving or that has to do with generosity. Maybe it's as simple as there's somebody in your life that God is calling you to talk to and you're not sure how it's going to go because you're either reaching out to them with the gospel as a coworker or a friend or a neighbor, or maybe it's just that there's a hard conversation that needs to be had. There's somebody that you see who's not walking on the right path, and God has put on your heart to talk to them, and it could go great, but it could go terrible, and you're just standing there on the verge of stepping forward. Chapter 1 of Joshua is all about the preparation for the trust walk, and I'm just going to give you a preview. The key word that we are going to encounter eventually, the key word of preparation for this trust walk is the word courage. We're going to see God. You probably heard it when Terry read the passage. We're going to see God command three times to Joshua to be courageous. And we're going to see that courage is at the center of any trust walk that God is leading us on. But here's what I want to share. I want to come back to the passage. I want to show you what God says to Joshua in verses 3, 4, and 5 as he continues to talk to him. He says to Joshua, I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river Euphrates, all the Hittite country, to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you or forsake you. Now, I want to say something that I think is really important about these verses, because these are rich verses of what he says to Joshua here. There's a phrase that good, careful Bible readers have used that's been very helpful for Christians as we looked at how to read the Bible well. And the phrase is this: the whole Bible was written for us. The whole Bible, though, was not written to us. And here's what this means. Everything in the Bible, everything Old Testament, New Testament, was all written for our instruction, and there's something beneficial for us in every passage in the Bible. But not everything that's said in the Bible is said directly to us in the same way that it was said directly to the first hearers. So here in verses 3 through 5, you have words said directly to Joshua and to the Israelites. And if we take them out of context, we can make some mistakes about how we apply this passage. Like, look in verse 3, I will give you every place where you set your foot. If you're like, that's not my new life verse. And maybe you're running a company and you're like, hey, there's this site over on Euclid that I want for a new site for my company. So I'm just going to go and stand there and God will give me every place I set my foot. No, he will not. That is not the promise here. The promise is to Joshua and the Israelites, and God's fulfilling a promise not only given to Moses, but given far before to Abraham. Verse 5, when it says, no one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life, this is not an invitation to go pick a fight with the biggest person you know. That would be dumb. That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is that God is saying to Joshua, with the promises I've made to you, nobody, no matter how big, no matter how strong, can thwart you in that. And actually, that's really important because of something that's about to happen and something that's already happened. With Joshua, when we get to the book of Joshua, it's not the first time we encounter him. He shows up throughout the books of Moses. He's, as verse 1 said in Joshua, he's Moses' aide. He's Moses' right-hand man. And he oversaw different battles in Israel, but probably the most important role that Joshua played is that Joshua was one of the 12 spies who was sent into the promised land to come back and report to the Israelites what it was like. Moses chose one man from each of the 12 tribes, sent them out, and they came back. And when they came back, 10 of the men looked at the Israelites and said, the people in the promised land are too big. They're too big, they're too strong, we can't defeat them, so we shouldn't go. And only two men, Caleb, who we're going to encounter later on in the book of Joshua, and Joshua were the only two who came and said, yep, they're big and they're strong and they're more fortified than we are, but we can do it because God is on our side. But the 10 overruled the two, and because of that, Israel wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. Joshua already had an encounter when he saw people bigger and stronger, and he had the faith to believe that God could still win the victory. God is confirming that, saying, if I am the one leading you, if I'm the one who's promised, I don't care who they are or what they do or what position they hold, no one can successfully stand against you. And then starting in verse 6, we get into these three times that God gives Joshua this core command in our passage: be strong and courageous. Three times over and over again, be strong and courageous. Be strong and very courageous. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. This is the command. This is at the center for Joshua. And this is really at the center for any of us who want to follow God successfully on the trust walk he's leading us on. Be strong and courageous. But I want to acknowledge something. Telling somebody to be strong and courageous is not necessarily super helpful without something more. Like just saying, have courage. It's a little bit like when you used to tell your mom, calm down. Like that doesn't work. Like no mom has ever calmed down because her kids told her to calm down. In fact, if you tell your mom to calm down, she's like, now I'm really worried. Like what's going on that you think I need to calm down? That doesn't help. In the same way telling somebody, oh, just be strong and courageous, that doesn't help. You're standing there and you're saying, I know I should be courageous. I want to have courage, but I'm still afraid. And so here's the beauty of what God does when three times he gives this command, be strong and courageous. Each time he gives Joshua a basis for that courage. He gives him a core truth that gives him a foundation and a reason to be courageous as he steps forward. And so let's look at not only these commands, but the grounding for these commands. Verse 6 is the first command. Be strong and courageous because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Timothy, your job, I'm sorry, not Timothy. I keep thinking of Timothy because Paul and Timothy and Moses and Joshua, there's a parallel there. But Joshua, your job is to be strong and courageous. I am the one who promised this land, and I am the one who is going to deliver this land to you. It's not your job to win it. It's my job to win it. It's just your job to be strong and courageous. So here's the first grounding that I want to give us of how we practice courage on our trust walk. The first way that we practice courage is by embracing the destination. And here's what I mean by this. God had not spelled out to Joshua every step along the way. But what he had said is, Joshua, I'll tell you how this story ends. The story ends in victory. The story ends with you being in the land that I promised. And the story ends with you having rest instead of continuing to wander in the desert. The story ends with victory. That is the destination. And so every step along the way, even when it's uncertain and it's confusing, I want you to embrace that the destination has already been won. Quick question for all of you. If you're following Jesus, do you know every step that you're going to take for the next 30 years? Answer is no. There's lots of uncertainty. There's lots of confusion. There's lots of questions. There's a lot of not knowing exactly where things are going. It's not all spelled out. And so one of the things that we have the privilege of doing is embracing that God has told us where the story ends. In fact, let me now just share two verses that I've been reflecting on this week that I think are especially helpful in this. The first one is Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. The Apostle Paul says, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. It's not easy to be courageous all the time. And sometimes we fail. And sometimes even when we're in the struggle, we feel like it's never going to get better. We're never going to be the people God has called us to. We're always going to be frail. We're always going to be fickle. We're always going to compromise and fall into sin. We're always going to be in the same sinful routines or cowardly routines. God makes a promise through Paul to the Philippian people and to us that he will complete the good work that he started in us. In other words, he's saying, all right, here's your job. Your job is to be faithful and courageous. My job is to complete the work that I've started in you. So don't get discouraged. Don't abandon the path. Keep going because I've promised to complete that work. Second verse I want to share, Romans 8:28. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. In all things, whatever trial you're facing, whatever scary thing out there, nothing can thwart God from working all things together for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. God doesn't tell us, I'm going to give you every single step along the way, just in the same way that if somebody's leading you in a trust walk, they can't tell you everything all at once. It's too much. They're just going to give you the next steps to take, and after that, they're going to give you the next steps to take after that. But what you can trust is that they've seen the end. God has seen and promised where this ends, and it ends in victory, and it ends in joy, and it ends in rest. So God says to Joshua, you can be courageous because you can embrace that the destination is already set. The victory is already won. So be strong and courageous. He says it again in verse 7. In fact, he says, be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. God, when he gives the second command to be strong and courageous, he reminds Joshua of a resource that he has. He says, you're not going into this blind. I mean, I'm going to tell you where to go throughout the way, but also through Moses, you have my written word. You have this book of the law, which wasn't just a book of rules, but was a book that revealed who God was and how they can walk with him and trust him. Saying, Joshua, you're in a good situation. You have the book of the law. Don't depart from it. Don't go to the right. Don't go to the left. Be careful to obey everything written in it. Keep it always on your mind, always on your heart. So first of all, God is saying to Joshua, be strong and courageous because you know the destination. In verses 7 and 8, he's telling him, be strong and courageous by obeying carefully. Because if you carefully obey what I have told you, in the words that he speaks in verses 7 and 8, you will be prosperous and successful. Now, what he doesn't say to Joshua is if you carefully obey everything I've told you, you will never have a difficult moment. But he says you will be prosperous and successful. You'll be in the center of my will if you carefully obey everything that I've told you. And I want to think about that wording there. If you carefully obey everything that I've told you. Thank God that his commitment to us is not based on our perfect obedience. In fact, you're going to see throughout the book of Joshua, it's not a smooth journey. There's stumbles and failures along the way, and the failures that happen is when people abandon God's idea and think that they have a better idea of how they can get to thriving in life. Thank God that his love for us is not dependent on our perfect obedience. But we experience more pain and chaos in our lives when we stray and when we don't obey carefully. And I just want to throw out there that I think in this room, there's probably not very many of us who are utterly indifferent to obeying God. If you're here on a Sunday morning, maybe especially on Father's Day, you're like, yeah, we have an interest in obeying God. We're not indifferent. We want to obey God. But I want to ask you the question, are you obeying carefully or are you obeying casually? And what I mean is that we might not be indifferent. We're like, no, I think it's important to obey what God has called me to, but maybe only in certain areas. Maybe there are some callings that God gives that we just say, that just seems unreasonable. Like a lot of this stuff is good, but the way that God commands us when it comes to money or when it comes to sexuality or when it comes to the words that we use or when it comes to different things, that's just unreasonable. So I'm going to mostly obey God, but in certain areas, I'm going to trust my gut that I have a better path forward to the ultimate life and thriving that I want. If you carefully follow Jesus, you are not guaranteed a smooth, seamless, trial-less path. But what you are promised is that you will experience the greatest version of God working all things together for your good because you're not taking matters into your own hands and bringing unnecessary pain into your life. I want to throw out that I think today, probably for some of us, our biggest takeaway from Joshua 1 is going to be this call to obey carefully. And let me just throw this out also. One of my favorite verses in the New Testament is 1 John chapter 5, verse 3, where John talks about obedience. He says, we obey God's commandments, but then he says, some of you know it, and his commandments are not burdensome. Some of you are like, they seem like they are. Like they cover every area of life. His commandments are not burdensome because God in his kindness gives us commandments for our good. And those commandments for our good are wiser than anything we could come up with. God tells Joshua, be strong and courageous, and know I am already committed to winning the battle. You don't need to worry about that. You do your part, I'll do my part. And then he says, be strong and courageous, and the more that you're walking in careful obedience, the more courageous you can be, because you know you're at the center of my will. There's one more command for courage, and this in many ways I think is the most important one in verse 9. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do you sense that God is really wanting to drive this point home? It's like, haven't I told you this? Have you been paying attention? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. By the way, some of you know this. What is the most frequent command given in the Bible? That's some version of do not be afraid, fear not. Most frequent command. Some people have counted it. I don't know exactly if they're counting this right, but what they've come up with is that there's 365 times this is commanded in the Bible. That seems kind of divine to me. 365 times, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord will, your God will be with you wherever you go. And some of you know that not every time, but most of the times when God's people are commanded, do not be afraid, the next thing that they're told is, for God will be with you. Don't be afraid, not because you're so strong and you can handle it, but don't be afraid because God will be with you wherever you go. Every step of the way. God is there with Joshua and he's like, yeah, I'm sending you, but I will be with you. In fact, some of you remember just a few verses earlier in verse 5, God said, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. God with us. If we can find courage because God has already carved out the destination, and if we can find courage because God has given us his word and we can obey carefully, we can have courage when we trust God's presence with us wherever we go. Because this promise of God's presence is not just something that's for Joshua or for the Israelites. It's a constant for God's people. God is with us. And he's always been with his people. But the culmination of God's presence with us showed up in Jesus. Some of you will remember the passage at the beginning of Matthew chapter 1, when the angel appears to Joseph and talks to him about Mary's pregnancy, that Mary is pregnant with Jesus. And the angel refers to an Old Testament passage from the book of Isaiah, that the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son. His name will be Emmanuel, which means God with us. God with us. And then amazingly enough, that's at the beginning of the book of Matthew. At the end of the book of Matthew, after Jesus has commissioned his disciples to go out and make disciples of all nations, the final words that he speaks in the Gospel of Matthew are, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. And Jesus' presence with us now shows up in the presence of the Holy Spirit, who we talked about last week on Pentecost Sunday, that he was with us and now he is in us. We have God with us every step that we take. I want to share with you, a bunch of years ago, I felt like God in his kindness sort of gave me a picture in my mind to think of whenever I'm daunted by something that he's calling me to do. And I'll just share, for some of you, if you're thinking of something big, like, oh, like if I'm ever called to like go on a mission trip or preach the gospel to a bunch of people, I'm not even talking about the things that seem big. I get daunted when God calls me to go have a challenging conversation with someone. I don't know, am I alone in that? Anybody else? I can feel overwhelmed with anxiety to say, if I say nothing, things are okay. But if I say something, a great thing could happen, but a terrible thing could happen. And sometimes I will delay and delay challenging conversations because of paralyzing fear of what's going to happen. The image that I felt like God gave me is this. It's the World War I image, and it's the trench warfare image. If you've ever seen a World War I movie. So I'm in the trench, I'm peeking up over the top of it, and there is just chaos and violence everywhere. People are fighting, guns are blazing, and it's a scary thing. But I know I've got to go out into it. Like God is calling me to go out into it, and I'm wanting to be courageous. I'm wanting to kind of get myself going, go out into the danger, go out and have courage going out into it. And as I'm getting ready to fire myself up to go out into the battle, I feel a hand on my shoulder, and I look to see that Jesus is standing next to me, and he just says two words. He says, "Let's go." Not you go, let's go. God is putting his arm on Joshua's shoulder, and he's saying to him, "Let's go. I've carved out the destination. I'm going to do what I've promised. I've given you my word that you can obey carefully, and I will be with you everywhere you go." If you're on the verge right now of God calling you into the unknown in some way, please know that the greatest comfort you have is that he will be with you. Let me share with you real quick a little of what happens in Joshua 1 after these verses that we've just read. So after this, Joshua goes to the officials of the people of Israel. He gets them ready. He says, "Hey, we're about to go. You get all the people ready. We're about to cross the Jordan into the land that God has promised." Then Joshua goes to the 2.5 tribes that had already settled on the east side of the Jordan. God had given them permission to settle before they crossed the Jordan, but they had promised to go with their brothers over into the country and help conquer it for them. And so Joshua goes and reminds them of that promise, and they say, "Yep, we're going to keep our promise. We're going to go over there. Our wives and our children and our livestock will stay, but we'll go over until the conquest is complete, until all the land is there." Then here's what happens. The sequence of Joshua 1 is that God speaks to Joshua, Joshua speaks to the people, and then in the last three verses, the people speak to Joshua. This is verses 16 through 18. "Then they answer Joshua, 'Whatever you have commanded us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey it, whatever you command them will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous.'" Now let me just throw this out here, because not everything's spelled out for us. It's possible that when God was speaking to Joshua, he was speaking in front of all the people, and they all heard God say three times to Joshua, "Be strong and courageous." That's possible. That's not what the passage seems to lead us to believe, though. It's that Joshua is having this private moment with God, and then he goes out and gets the people ready. So what I believe is much more likely is that Joshua heard three times from God to be strong and courageous. Then he decided to take the first step and get the people ready, and the people respond, and they say, we're with you. We'll go with you. We only ask one thing from you, Joshua. Be strong and courageous." I just got to imagine Joshua nodding his head and saying, "Okay, God, I get it." Not just three times, four times, be strong and courageous. And one of the things that I think is so powerful about the people telling Joshua to be strong and courageous is that it's a reminder that our call to follow God courageously on the trust walk that he's leading us to is not a call that impacts only us. Joshua's courage was not just about Joshua. It was about all the people who would ride his coattails with his courage. The courage that God is calling you to practice right now is not just for you. It's for everyone looking at you. I can't help but think of this with Father's Day for those of us who are dads. The idea, the courage that God is calling you to with whatever he's calling you to do, that's not just courage for you. Your kids are watching, and if you walk courageously, they are much more likely to walk courageously. This goes for moms and dads with their kids. This goes for grandmas and grandpas. This goes for all of the coworkers and classmates and friends and people who are watching us and are courageously following Jesus is going to lead others to do the same. Only be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous because God has already embraced and won and conquered the destination, and you can count on him. Be strong and courageous, carefully obeying, not casually obeying everything that God has called you to. And be strong and courageous, trusting God's presence will be with you wherever you go. We're going to have an opportunity a little bit later on to respond in some different ways to this, but the first way that we're going to get to respond to this message is that we're going to get to take communion together. I'm going to invite those helping out with communion to head to the back. Man, I always feel like it's the right time for communion. But with this passage, I feel like this is especially powerful because this passage is a reminder that we can take steps forward because God is with us. And the ultimate way that God showed that he was with us was through sending his beloved son to die a sacrificial death for us. Communion is about remembering. And even as we're reading the book of Joshua, it's about us remembering ways that God was faithful in the past so that we can trust him moving forward. Communion gives us an opportunity to remember God's ultimate act of faithfulness, that Jesus' body was broken and that his blood was shed for us so that we can trust him moving forward. And so here's what's going to happen. During this next song, the elements are going to be passed, and I'm going to invite you to hold on to those, and we'll all take those together at the end of the time. What I want to invite you to reflect on, though, during this next song and during this preparation is how God's past faithfulness to you prepares you to courageously step forward in whatever he's calling you to. So let me pray over us as we prepare. Father, thank you so much that you don't just distantly call out to us to be courageous as we follow you, but that you give us everything we need. Most importantly, your presence. Thank you that you were with Joshua and you were with the Israelites. Thank you that you are with us. And thank you that you prove your love for us through the sacrifice of Jesus. I pray that this time of remembrance will honor you and will bring joy to you. And I pray that you bring hope and strength to us as we look to follow you and where you're leading us. In Jesus' name, amen.